This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The current Movement Control Order, or the MCO, and the suspension of activities by NGOs by the Registrar of Societies have made it impossible to have any proper assessment of impacts or dialogue on the proposed degazettement of the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve. So it came as a surprise when the Selangor State Government announced that it would soon conduct a public hearing session for the proposed degazettement. The Coalition for the Protection of Selangor's Forests are calling upon the Selangor State Government to formally suspend the degazettement process. And I find out what's happening from Faisal Parish, the director of the Global Environment Centre, or GEC, which is part of the coalition. Hi, Faisal. How are you today?
Hi there. Good.
Thank you for joining us today. So, Faisal, I think maybe just for everyone's benefit, can you remind us about what's happening? You know, the Selangor State Government is proposing to degazette about 97% of the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve for a mixed development project. Can you remind us what's been happening?
Yes, certainly. On the 5th of February this year, the state government issued a notice giving the public 30 days to object to the degazettement for mixed development of the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve. Mm-hmm. This forest reserve covers about 950 hectares of land in Kuala Langat district next to the elite highway to KLIA. Mm-hmm. And 97% is proposed to be degazetted for a mixed development project, but at the moment we don't know what that project is. So after the announcement on the 5th of February, asking for objections. We know that the 44,000 objections were sent and received by the state government, mm-hmm. but we believe at least another 60,000 people signed petitions against the project. So there's very rapid and strong response against the project. However, on the 17th of March at the State Assembly, the Chief Minister also announced the process to develop the inquiry.
That's right.
We understand that according to the state enactment for the inquiry, the inquiry should be held 30 days after the closing of the objection period,
right,
which was 5th of March. Mm-hmm. So that would mean, according if they follow the enactment, that the inquiry would be held on 4th of April. And we don't believe that this is appropriate or possible.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you can help explain why it is inappropriate and why it's quite impossible, to have it, especially when there's an MCO happening.
I mean, the State Assembly session was the day after the announcement of the MCO.
That's right.
But in the Chief Minister's statement, there was no reference to the fact that this would be postponed because of the MCO. Mm-hmm. So, one, the MCO is still operational at least till 14th of April, and we don't know whether it will be extended beyond there. Mm-hmm. Secondly, on the 16th of March, the day before the State Assembly sitting, the Registrar of Societies suspended NGO activities and meetings until 1st of July this year. So, it's absolutely impossible in a situation when we have MCO, we have society activities suspended. We also, JACOA, suspended all activities related to outside groups interacting with Orang Asli, mm-hmm. Also because of the risk of disease. So we fully support those measures. But in these circumstances, it's absolutely impossible to have a proper preparation for and inquiry.
Mm-hmm. And so by state law, right, public opinion must be sought before an exercise to degazette a forest reserve is carried out. And that's exactly what has happened. But, you know, when the plan was announced in that notice in those two newspapers, you know, there were some issues, with regard to how that notice came about. It was only in two newspapers. You know, it was only the plan to degazette was, you needed to give your response within 30 days. I mean, can you walk me through some of the issues with that initial announcement itself?
One, basically, there was very little information. There was, other than just the statement mixed development, mm-hmm. there was no information given on the nature of the work to be undertaken. What is that mixed development? Why is it so important? Why is it critical to be located there? I mean, there's plenty of land in Selangor. There's many other places. If the state government or private sector want to do a development, there is plenty of land that they can buy, or there is plenty of other state land which is already zoned for development. That could be the focus. So this is why we're so puzzled why they want to develop in one of the last remaining good forests and green lungs in the southern part of Selangor.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was the other issue I think that was brought up was just that they only asked for stakeholders in the Kuala Langat district to voice their objections to the plan. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. In the notice, they asked for those from Kuala Langat district to send objections, but they were silent on others. But our understanding of the enactment, and definitely the principle of the enactment, as we understand from those in the State Assembly at the time the enactment was passed, mm-hmm. was that this should be open to all stakeholders. In fact, that is what the enactment says. In the main text, it's for any stakeholder to object, but only in the example in the annex to the enactment of the notice does it mention district. So we feel very strongly that objections should be open to anyone, whether they're from Selangor or within Malaysia. Anyone with a concern about this should be allowed to give their objection. And in fact, we requested, and many requested, including the local Orang Asli community, requested for an extension of the objection period mm-hmm. for another 30 days and a clarification on the expansion of the scope of the objections to cover all interested parties. But the state government, in their wisdom, refused that request for extension.
Okay. And maybe it's good to tell people, you know, why this area, why Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve is such an important area for biodiversity conservation. And I think that includes critically endangered flora and fauna as well.
Yes, indeed. It's one of the few remaining forests in the southern portion of Selangor State. It's a unique and rare forest. It has a combination of peat swamp forest and lowland dipterocarp forest, so two major types in one area. There are many rare species of plant and animal, including the Langat red fighting fish, which has only recently been described and only occurs in the Langat area. Mm. And it's also the one of the only places in Selangor where we can find the Selangor pygmy flying squirrel. There are also other rare species, such as the sun bear and many rare plant species in this. So from a biodiversity point of view, it's really a critical hotspot. And because it's located right next to Putrajaya, Cyber Jaya, and other urban areas, it has massive potential as an education and research center, as well as being a green lung for the surrounding developments.
Mm-hmm. And what are the repercussions of forests like these being degraded, especially, you know, now when we are talking about, you know, preserving global biodiversity and, you know, the need for safe drinking water, etc.?
So basically, if the forest were developed, 100% of the biodiversity, the species within the forest would be lost. And in the case of rare endangered species like the Langat red fighting fish, mm-hmm. there is nowhere else in the world that it occurs.
That's right.
So it would be totally lost. The other significant impact is that this is a critical part of the land and heritage of the local Orang Asli communities. There are four Orang Asli villages very near to the forest. Some of them have been there for, as far as we know, more than 150 years. Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely essential and critical to their culture and livelihood and way of being. There are grave sites, there are sacred sites, there are very close connections to the community, and they also rely on it for medicinal products, for food, for other things coming from this forest area. Mm-hmm. So if it's lost, then totally that critical importance for the Orang Asli community would be gone forever.
And, you know, the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve is also an environmentally environmental sensitive area. Am I correct? What does that mean?
So environmentally sensitive area is designated under the National Physical Plan, which is the main guiding document for all development in Peninsular Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And this area is classified as environmentally sensitive area class 1. That means that it's extremely critical area and it may not, under any circumstances, be developed for agriculture, logging, housing, industry, or other purposes.
Hmm.
And that is also reflected in the state structure plan to the year 2035, that it's also designated as environmentally sensitive area. And within the local plan for Kuala Langat District, which was only gazetted by the state government in 2018, it is also designated as a critical environmentally sensitive area that must be maintained. And here we are, just about a year or so after this plan was gazetted, and that plan runs till 2030. The state government is proposing something totally opposed to the gazetted local plan for development in this area without any clear explanation what the project is.
Really boggles the mind. But, you know, the MB of Selangor, he has said that the forest reserve has been categorized as a fire-prone area and, you know, that the forest is a fire risk zone. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Unfortunately, it seems his information is out of date. The last fire recorded in the area was more than 3 years ago. In the last 5 years, there's only been one fire in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to 2014, there were some problems in the area because development coming up around the area was impacting it and portions were being drained.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of fires which were spreading from the Elite Highway. But starting 2015, actually at the specific request of the former chief minister, Global Environment Centre, the Forestry Department, together with the local Orang Asli community, have been working very hard to prevent fire in the area, and it has been very successful in reducing by 90% the presence of fire in the area, and most of the degraded area previously has been recovered, either by the Orang Asli blocking the drainage and planting trees or through natural regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
And more than 90% of the fire-prone area has recovered as dense forest. And this is now recovered also as wildlife habitat. We're finding endangered species in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And these areas are no longer classified as fire-prone areas.
Something else that the Selangor MB said, this was last month, was that the state government plans to replace the degazetted forest with a bigger area of forest, and you know that the combined area of the new reserves will span at least about 1,092 hectares. He mentioned options like a plot in Sungai Panjang in Sabah Bernam or a second plot in the same area in Ampang Pecha. And he said that not only were these peat forests of better quality, but that gazetting, for example, the Sungai Panjang plot would enable it to be merged with the existing Raja Musa Forest Reserve, enlarging what was already the largest peat forest in the peninsula. What are your thoughts on that?
Of course, we support any measures by the state government to gazette additional forest reserve. In fact, that has been their plan announced for many years, that they would seek to expand the area of forest in Selangor in protection, and that all intact forest areas would be put into forest reserves. So we are supportive of that. And in fact, when the MB made this announcement, he didn't say he said they're already in the process to gazette them.
That's right.
So we support that process. We're not against that. But gazetting a forest reserve does not give you the right, in our view, to destroy another area.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of biodiversity, the biodiversity is not the same. You cannot say you can replace an area 100 kilometers away, and then all the animals from one is going to pop across to the other, jump on the bus and go there and to their new home. It doesn't work like that.
No.
I mean, totally, once they develop Kuala Langat North, 100% of the species, of the animals, of the things there, will totally die and be killed. It will not be a new home for them created somewhere else. While it is important for the Selangor to continue with its existing policy of expanding and restoring forest land in the state, we do not think that that is the right approach to justify destroying other critically important forests.
Okay, and of course, everything is still in the proposal stage at the moment. But you know, what the degazettement, of course, is the first critical step towards removing the forest protected status. But the MB, you know, at the Selangor State Legislative Assembly sitting on 17th of March, said that the public can still submit their objections. Is that correct?
I don't think he really said that, but in our view. Mm-hmm. The public is always free to submit their objections.
Okay.
I mean, and if not to the Forest Department through the formal objection period, mm-hmm. they can be submitted to the state government, to the Chief Minister. So I think those are welcome. And we're seeing still people are signing up to the various petitions online. So there are possibilities. And until the time of the inquiry when it's held, people can be raising their concerns. And at the inquiry, then people also have the right to come and give their concerns.
Mm-hmm. So if you could help walk us through what the process of the degazettement will be like, because so now it's still the feedback process. And, you know, the MB said that objections submitted would be scrutinized by the Public Investigation Committee before being presented to the state government. I mean, what sort of happens after that?
So according to the process in the enactment, so first, there is a period of objections. Mm-hmm. So that has already happened. Then the next, according to the enactment, it says within 30 days after the closing of objections, the state shall organize an inquiry, and it specifies who should be the board of the inquiry. And we're not aware whether or not the state has set up that structure yet. And then there should be inquiry at which all those who have objected should have the right to be heard. Mm-hmm. But we have more than 40,000 people who've objected, or in our figures, over 100,000. Mm-hmm. And that would be quite the massive procedure, which in our view cannot be considered until after the MCO is lifted, after Malaysia is back to normal. The other, then after that inquiry, mm-hmm. according to the legislation, it says within 2 weeks the report of the inquiry should be done, but actually that seems quite short. If there are 40,000 or 100,000 people objecting, it would take longer than 2 weeks to prepare a report.
That's right.
And then the state government should make a decision after that. But in our view, and from experience from previous inquiries, there are a lot of critical steps which have been left out of the process. Mm-hmm. When we look at the previous degazettement in Selangor, which has mainly been for highway alignment, the critical step before the degazettement is the completion of an environmental and social impact assessment. Mm-hmm. And this must be prepared before the development. And in our view and normal common practice, the full EIA must be prepared in accordance with the EIA Order 2015, and that should be prepared before the degazettement process. If there's no environmental and social impact assessment, what is the real basis for a decision on the degazettement itself? If the area just is degazetted, and then the EIA says no development should be allowed, and the area needs to be regazetted again, that is wasted work.
Yeah.
Secondly, as I mentioned, this area is classified as environmentally sensitive area class 1 under National Physical Plan. Mm-hmm. And by right, there should be a proper inquiry and consultation and process under the Town and Country Planning Act related to any modification or not of the local plan, which was gazetted in 2018. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be properly undertaken, again, in our view, before degazettement can be considered. because the de-gazettement would then be totally against the gazetted local plan.
That's right.
So these things are being done for some reason in the wrong order. In normal circumstances, the nature and the why this is a state or national priority need to be presented. So what is the development? In the case of the highway or transmission line, which is the normal reason for de-gazettement, then that is justified. What is the significance of the highway? Why is a transmission line key? But when you use the vague term of mixed development, it conveys no understanding of what is the significance or the value of that and why it must be in this area. So normally in environmental impact assessment, there must be a consideration of different sites. So why has this particular site, is it only this site which is suitable for the project? Mm-hmm. That must be considered. So if the state government wants to do development, and we understand part of the development is to be done by Mentri Besar Incorporated, but the state government has thousands of hectares of already cleared and degraded land that could be used for development. There are also thousands of hectares of plantation land that they could take over for such a development. Similarly, we understand one of the developers is a private developer. They also can purchase land, but why would they propose it in a forest reserve? This is rather perplexing to us.
Puzzling to us all. So we are here at this point now, and of course, as you mentioned, you know, there's an MCO, but they're proceeding with the de-gazettement process. And I guess the message here is that, you know, that really needs to stop as we face far more urgent pressing matters at the moment.
Yes, I mean, we have not had a formal notice of the inquiry date. It's just that we know, according to the enactment, it should be held within 30 days. And in the State Assembly meeting, the day after MCO was announced, the state government did not mention any change in the timetable. Mm-hmm. And that we have been seeking to get clarification. Until now, we have had no clarification. Okay. So we really hope that the public inquiry process, either two options. One, the state government has listened to all of these objections and is not proceeding. That would be the best outcome in our view. Or secondly, if it wants to proceed, that it would A, complete an environmental impact and social impact assessment first, and that normally will take 6 to 12 months. And secondly, that they will organize an inquiry and consultation under the Town and Country Planning Act and consider or justify the reason to modify the local plan for the area. And then only then consider or reconsider this de-gazettement process based on the output of those various processes. So in our view, because of the MCO and the suspension of civil society activities, there should be a delay until at least July, at earliest July. But in view of the need to do EIA and other studies, then we should be talking of a much longer delay so that everyone fully understands. And we also call on the state to give us more details of the proposed urgent mixed development that is being considered for the area.
And I mean, also, you know, to have dialogue and assessment of the area to the Orang Asli, especially because this is really affecting their lives completely.
This is incredibly important because there are more than 1,000 Orang Asli in 4 villages. And as I mentioned, some of the villages have been there with documentary records nearly 150 years, but may have been there much longer.
That's right.
And they have such a close cultural and personal connection to the forest that the removal in this way would really be totally against that. When the forest was first gazetted, that was in 1927, that was almost 100 years ago, it was specifically stated in the gazettement notice that the Orang Asli have the right to live in the area, to use the area, to use take water from the area, non-timber forest product from the area, even trees from the area. So mm-hmm. they were given the full rights for this area. Mm-hmm. But over time, more and more of the forest has been destroyed and degraded, and they're left with this 950 hectares remaining, the remaining bit. And that is so valuable to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, one could say it has no, you can't put an economic value. It is priceless value to them. And that's another issue that we're a bit puzzled, because another justification the Menteri Besar mentioned in the State Assembly was the state was going to get so much money from the development. Yes. But he mentioned a figure which was only 3 ringgit per square foot that they would get for a mixed development project on the area. Mm-hmm. And this is very strange, because it's less than 2% of the value of land being sold on adjacent areas in Cyberjaya. And that is without the development cost, which the development benefit, which we would imagine would increase it by several fold. So why are the state government saying it's very important to develop, it's very critical, and yet it will bring so little revenue to the state that they could get just as much revenue by selling 20 hectares of adjacent state land in Cyberjaya or elsewhere? So why are they undervaluing it so much when they come to develop the land? So that is a big puzzle to us. And therefore, we want to see, is it a facility of such value to the public that they're going to underprice the land because the facility is so valuable for the public? Mm-hmm. But we haven't heard. Is it hospitals or other things? Is that why they want to charge such little for the development of the land? Okay. So these are important things that need to be clarified before moving to the next stage of the degazettement process.
Okay. All right. So like you said, a lot of unanswered questions and, it's best to defer things, till when the country is in a more stable state, hopefully in the near future, so that we can do this properly and, taking into consideration everyone's interests as well.
Yeah, I think one final point, mm-hmm. I mean, particularly in this time of COVID-19, mm-hmm. when we're all at our home and then we're realizing how valuable whatever out there is, and we're all wishing we were out in the nature and environment. Yeah. And also we realize that COVID-19 was caused when we ignore the need to protect nature.
That's right.
When we hunt and keep exotic species for food, when we ignore the rules of nature, then we are creating these damaging disasters for ourselves. And in this time, we need to realize that nature does not need us. We need nature. And we should reflect on that and say, why at this time, when we're realizing the significance of our natural world, are we coming forward and destroying it for the sake of, in our view, nothing important? Do we value a shopping mall more than our life? Do we value that more than what God has given us on this earth to look after? We need to be proper stewards of our land, and we hope that the state government will recognize that also.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Faisal, for joining me today. That was Faisal Parish, the director of the Global Environment Centre, discussing the proposed degazettement of the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve and why that degazettement process needs to be put on hold during this COVID-19 pandemic. If you'd like to find out more information, you can always head to the Coalition for the Protection of Selangor's Forests Facebook page, or you can also head to GEC's website at gec.org.my. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on the BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.